It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and this is Iowa Week. All week long on Talk of Iowa and River to River, we're going to be exploring artistic Iowa. And to begin our journey, I am standing outside an unassuming little carriage house off of 2nd Avenue in Cedar Rapids. And this is the location where probably the most well-known piece of art from Iowa was created. This is Grant Wood's studio. And with me is Catherine Kuhnow. She'll be my guide today. She is Associate Curator at the Cedar Rapids Museum of Art. Hello, Catherine.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. We're excited to do this.
Well, I'm really excited to be here. And we're going to start just by heading up the stairs because the studio was actually in a loft apartment above the carriage house.
Yeah, it was the original hay loft when this was the Turner Mortuary and the hearse was downstairs and that's where the horses were. So there's no interior access, so we have to go up these stairs on the exterior of the building.
All right, let's head in. We've just walked up what I'm guessing are not the original stairs.
No, these are definitely a later addition, much safer than the originals.
But this door is really unusual. I mean, tell me about it.
This is a coffin lid, actually. A reproduction, the originals at the Cedar Rapids Museum of Art, just for safety's sake. But yeah, you can see Grant Wood very cleverly painted in the glass. And he liked his friends to come over, and he liked to entertain a lot. And so he created this beautiful little clock, and, you know, the hands could turn around to painting in the studio, having a party, taking a bath. Any one of those, you know, he could have the hands face that, so when people dropped by, they would know what was happening.
And why make a door out of a coffin lid?
Well, this was when Grant Wood lived here. The house was originally the Turner Mortuary, and so it would have been at hand. And Grant Wood was very crafty and always liked to use what he had available and was a little frugal, so he appreciated that as well.
Oh, so the first thing you walk in, the first door on your left is the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Was he a big bath taker?
You know, I always forget. I believe he liked showers and his mother liked baths. And so you can see that he sunk the bathtub in so that there was room for a shower over it. That's the original hay pass where they would have tossed the hay down for the horses. So there are a lot of clever little things like that in this apartment where he accommodates his taste and his mother's taste. And as you can see, it's not a large space. So he had to be very creative about the use of it.
And did he actually live here?
Oh, yeah. From 1924 until 1935 when he moved to Iowa City. So this is where he painted all of the masterpieces. American Gothic, as you referenced, Young Corn, Midnight Ride of Paul Revere, Daughters of the American Revolution, Woman with Plants. The big pieces happened here.
And his mother lived with him.
Mm-hmm.
For all of that time?
Yeah, she actually died in 1935 as well, not long after his marriage, I believe. But yeah, she lived here the whole time. A little bit later, post-1924, he created this separate little room for her so she could have some privacy when he had friends over. But originally, they just both had mattresses that kind of slid underneath those alcoves over there.
Wow, so not a lot of privacy.
No, not a lot of privacy. It's a charming space. It's beautiful, and you can see there's so much natural light. It's a wonderful painter's studio. But, yeah, for two people and occasionally three, because his sister Nan, there were spells when she was here as well, it's definitely not a space you would look at and think, yeah, that's totally a three-person apartment and also a functional artist studio.
Right. Well, let's walk in, and it is a studio apartment, so there is a bigish open room. Is that a little kitchen?
It is, yeah. The kitchen is very charming, and a lot of it was Grant's design. You can see all of the shelving here was his. He actually put in that skylight himself. This was actually an apartment up until about the 1970s, so there are some later additions that you can see, but the bones of it are still very Grant Wood. And as I said earlier, he's very clever about space. Any place you can have storage, he's made shelves. So it's really very charming.
And a very tiny kitchen.
Yes, very small. As someone who's seen a lot of studio apartments, this is even smaller.
Now, you mentioned the natural light in this space, and there is a big window on each side, and then in the middle there's a cupola that has windows in the cupola. Was it the light that attracted Grant Wood to this space?
I'm certain that that's what kept him here. He had been teaching at the Cedar Rapids in the Cedar Rapids Community School District, and so it was the idea that Turner gave this to him as a studio, originally not as a living space, for free. And that really freed him up. And then he realized, oh, I could turn this into an apartment. I could live here. And the freedom to do that with no charge was really what freed him up to quit his job at the school district and devote himself to his art full time. And he did make some adjustments to it. That window towards the back of the apartment, he actually pushed it out a little bit and added that window to get light from really four sides, I suppose, if we're considering the cupola as well.
So this apartment wasn't just the site of these great masterpieces. In some ways, it is the thing that made the masterpieces possible.
Oh, absolutely. It really is. This was a huge turning point in his career.
And we've seen his mother's bedroom and the bathroom with the sunken bathtub and this tiny, tiny kitchen. We've got a little fireplace here, which I can imagine was the only source for warmth.
I believe so, yes. And this is, Grant would put this in, and he, you know, has the upturned coal bin kind of as the fireplace hood. So again, he's very creative.
What do we know about how he worked in this space? As we walk in the door, we see an easel that has some reproductions of some of his most famous works. But what do we know about how he used the space?
We work a lot off of pictures from that time. You'll see over there, we have one blown up, and we've put the easel in the space where it is in that picture. And you can see that's a really good point. The confluence of light really happens there, so it's a good working space for him. But when we do things in the studio, we really try to look at old pictures and see what was where. We go to a lot of antique stores and try and find some items that work from a specific time and then, you know, place them where we see them in the studio. So it's a really fun project. He was always very cognizant of kind of his brand, to use a little bit of an anachronistic term. So like in that picture, you can see he's posing with Daughters of the American Revolution, and he's got his overalls on, very shiny saddle shoes. You know, often he'll have a paintbrush or a cigarette in his hand, but obviously, you know, he's not painting. This is a very formal picture that he's taking. So he was really conscious of his image and what he wanted to be put forth to the world. So it's interesting to look back at those pictures and kind of consider how self-conscious most of them were.
The clock on the door that tells us what Grant Wood is doing at the moment, it does include having a party. He was a pretty social guy, so what kind of gatherings would he have had in this space?
He had a lot of great parties. He had lots of good friends in Cedar Rapids, including, of course, Marvin Cohn. If you look at those two poles kind of separating one part of this open space from the other, they used to hang curtains there and do theatrical productions. His sister Nan writes a lot of fun stories about, you know, having tons of people fill the space to see one of the productions. And you can see, you know, there's space off in the wings where people could have waited.
It's just so funny to think about having gatherings and having theatrical productions in this space, because I think it bears repeating. It is not very big.
No, it's a beautiful space. It's got wonderful light. I never visit without thinking that I would love to live here, but as a person by myself, not with three other people and a host of friends coming in and out all the time.
What do you think we can learn about Grant Wood from being in this space?
And since I've been at the museum, I've obviously delved into Grant Wood in a much deeper way. But what I always take away with me from coming to the studio is, you know, we think of him obviously primarily as a painter, but he was so artistic in so many other ways. He designed the metal pattern that's on that screen. He did a lot of
that's
these cutouts.
The screen that separates his mother's bedroom from the main mm-hmm. space.
He was very crafty. Like I said, he really made this a home. He created lots of storage for himself, lots of artistic touches. There's a series of niches kind of throughout the apartment. They framed the windows. We've got two by the cupola. And if you look at pictures of the apartment from the time that he lived here, you know, he had figurines in them. There were lots of potted plants. So I always love to be reminded of how handy he was and how interested in all sorts of arts he was. It's a nice reminder that, you know, we always usually remember artists primarily for one particular thing. But Grant Wood was such a multifaceted personality. It's really fun to see his living space and see how he worked in it like that.
Throughout the hour, we're going to explore what Grant Wood means to Iowa. But what do you think Grant Wood means to Cedar Rapids?
Oh, my goodness. Grant Wood's a really big part of Cedar Rapids. People are very passionate about him. And, of course, we always have Grant Woods up at the museum, and people have favorites, and they want to see this, or, oh, I remember when that was last up and I came to see it. So people have really personal relationships with him. And even now in 2016, there are still people who know someone who knew someone who lived next door to him or was a model for one of his pieces. So there's still a really strong personal connection that people in Cedar Rapids have to Grant Wood that is just wonderful. It's really fun to see. It's fun to talk to these people. And they're so passionate about him.
There are traces of Grant Wood all over town and really all over this part of the state.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite Grant Wood touch that's somewhere in Cedar Rapids that you just love?
Oh, my goodness. I think we're standing in my favorite Grant Wood part of Cedar Rapids. But, of course, gosh, I love them all. I love the Bruce Moore porch that he painted. I love his house in Iowa City. That's a really wonderful piece as well. Of course, I went to art PhD in art history, so I spent a lot of time in the old art building. He put the cornerstone down there, so, of course, that's a really important piece. So, like you said, he's just kind of all over the corridor, really. So it's fun whenever you run into a good example of his work.
Do you feel like Grant Wood, I mean, he lived here, he did his work here, do you feel like he made a lasting impact on the community of Cedar Rapids?
Oh, absolutely. And, of course, you know, as Associate Curator of the Art Museum, I deal a lot with the local artists. And just last night I was with this group of landscape artists, and we were talking about the impact that Grant Wood has had on them, because Grant Wood really primatized Midwestern landscape. Before Grant Wood, it was all East Coast or Europe, or it was very dramatic, and there were thunderstorms and volcanoes and everything. But Grant Wood really made Midwestern landscape like a serious subject of art. And he said, you know, you don't need to go to the East Coast. You don't need to go to the mountains. Like, the land that I grew up in is worthy of artistic attention. And so I think that's a wonderful legacy, and I see it every day in the contemporary artists that I deal with.
Catherine Kuhnau, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
I've been talking with Catherine Kuhnau. She's Associate Curator at the Cedar Rapids Museum of Art, and we are standing right now in Grant Wood's studio and apartment in Cedar Rapids. This hour, we'll be talking about Grant Wood's work, his life, and his legacy on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Iowa Week, and that means all this week on Talk of Iowa and River to River, we are exploring artistic Iowa. This hour, we're focusing on one of Iowa's most famous sons, the most famous artist to come out of the state of Iowa, Grant Wood. And this year marks the 125th anniversary of his birth. We visited his studio apartment in Cedar Rapids. And as we talk about his life, his work, and his legacy, we would love to hear from you. What does Grant Wood mean to you? And what do you think he means to Iowa? You can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And with me right now is Joni Kinsey. She's a professor of American art history at the School of Art and Art History at the University of Iowa. She also serves on the National Advisory Board for the Grant Wood Art Colony, which sponsors Grant Wood Fellows. And Joni, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
Now, we were just up at the studio apartment, and we were talking about that period of Grant Wood's life. And what followed that period was his tenure at the University of Iowa, which his life was such a struggle in so many ways. This period of time at the University of Iowa, did that represent financial security and a kind of secure life that he'd not experienced before?
It certainly brought him financial security. At the same time, there were other kinds of insecurities that he faced during this time in all sorts of ways. It was the height of the Depression, and he did quite well financially, both with his university salary and his work continued to sell well, but art didn't sell well much during this period. But he was very creative in that regard and did all right with that. But at the same time, his situation here at the university was fraught with politics of many sorts, and it took its toll on him in many ways.
Well, and he lost his mother, who, of course, he was very, very close to, and he got married. That was a very brief marriage. What were some of the other political problems that he was experiencing at the University of Iowa.
Mm-hmm. When he first came to the University of Iowa, he came through the Public Works of Art Project, which was one of the New Deal programs. It was actually the very first New Deal program that sponsored artists to work in the United States. He was the Iowa State Director, the director of the State of Iowa Public Works of Art Project, and he supervised the construction of murals for especially Iowa State Library, which they still exist today in the library.
And
there.
We will talk about those in great detail a little bit later.
They're quite wonderful. And through that program, a lot of other artists did other murals, particularly in post offices and elsewhere, that brought him to the attention of the University of Iowa, who were they were anxious to bring this most famous artist to campus and bring this federal program. So they invited him to do the project down here, giving him studio space for the mural project and essentially faculty status in early 1934. And he came to campus, and his employees, the federal employees, were given student status. They got a government paycheck and course credit at the same time. And that was great, but he was also, interestingly, considered by the art department, which he was now a faculty member in, as a modernist. The department at the time was very conservative, almost 19th century in its orientation, and his work was regarded as relatively radical in a modernist sense. But within a very short time, about 2 years, by 1936, there was a new department chairman brought in. His name was Lester Longman, and he was a Ph.D. art historian from Princeton. But he was fashioning himself as a modern art critic, and he was very interested in abstraction and what he regarded, what he called international modernism, cubism, expressionism, mostly European art. And he regarded Grant Wood as hopelessly provincial and extremely old-fashioned. And
he kind of went from, oh, you're really out there, to, oh, that's so over.
Exactly. And Longman really did not like Grant Wood in many different ways. His art was kind of an anathema to him, and personally, Grant Wood represented everything that Lester Longman regarded as provincial. So the two of them developed over the course of the second half of the 1930s a deep animosity. This caused all kinds of problems.
Tell me, for people who don't study art history, how is Grant Wood's art defined now?
He certainly is the most exemplary regionalist painter, and that term, regionalism, was a term used during the period. Grant Wood advocated artists not only in Iowa, not only in relatively rural places, but wherever they might be, to paint what they knew, to paint what was around them. And so in many ways, we could regard even urban paintings of that period, usually in a rather figurative mode, as regionalist, although that's not always the case. Usually regionalism is defined as kind of the big three regionalists, Benton, Wood, and Curry, John Stuart Curry and Thomas Hart Benton, along with Grant Wood. And they tended to paint Midwestern scenes, often rather rural, in a mode that is arguably somewhat modern, but certainly not abstract.
What kind of a relationship did Grant Wood have with students? He taught in many different places. He taught in the Cedar Rapids Public Schools. Mm-hmm. He taught at his artist colony in Stone City. He taught at the University of Iowa. What was he like as a teacher?
That is kind of hard to ferret out. He was much beloved by some, and others thought that he was rather dictatorial in the way that he required students to, as some would say, paint like he did. And this was also a point of controversy.
Obviously not universally beloved, but do we know a little bit about his teaching style, how he connected with students? He seemed to take on pretty big projects with students, even his younger students.
He did. Certainly he used that mural project as a teaching opportunity. He had had some very creative projects with his junior high and high school students earlier, encouraging them to make, for example, this Imagination Isles mural up in, it's now in the Cedar Rapids Art Museum, in which it was almost a kind of fantasy landscape, and all of these students were involved in this collaborative project. In individual one-on-one teaching at the University of Iowa, he apparently took great pains to work closely with students and even held what he called art clinics in an old amphitheater for operating, a medical operating theater here on campus. Took this old operating theater and turned it into an art clinic. People could bring in work and have it critiqued. And he really did take his teaching quite seriously.
We were talking earlier again about that studio apartment in Cedar Rapids where most of his most well-known masterpieces were created. Creatively, what was the time in Iowa City like for Grant Wood?
It was very active and very interesting. Very shortly after his arrival, he got involved with this cross-campus program. A lot of professors in particular were involved, called the Times Club, and it was sort of an extracurricular program that brought speakers to campus. They brought a host of very interesting people to campus for lectures and conversation and revelry sometimes. Lots of interesting people. Gertrude Stein was invited, and she didn't actually make it because of a blizzard, but a number of leading individuals of the time period, Henry Wallace, for example, who was vice president of the United States later, Secretary of Agriculture, an Iowan. Lots of actually interesting individuals from what we call the Harlem Renaissance, very interesting in their racial diversity and interests of the time period. They were a very interesting group. And the cultural climate in Iowa City at the time extended the Times Club into this wonderful program they called the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Speakers. I think that was Grant Wood's term. And after these lectures, they would invite them up to the rooms that are now the Prairie Lights upstairs, bookstore area, and have parties in rooms that Grant Wood decorated in what he called the worst of the Victorian style. He had a great sense of humor.
Well, and that plays on what we were talking about earlier with his love of entertaining, even in that tiny studio apartment, and the theatrical performances that he liked to put on. He really poured a lot of his creativity into creating moods and social gatherings around himself.
He does have, throughout his career, a real thread of you might call it, community building and getting artists involved in projects that were both individual and collaborative. And one of the most notable of these, I guess, is the Stone City Art Project of the two summers in 1932 and 33, in which he and his friend Marvin Cohn from Cedar Rapids and a number of others that became the faculty of this program decided that it was too expensive in this Depression era to go lots of places to paint, so they would paint here, and this would be a real flowering of Iowa art and regionalism, and it was accredited by Coe College, and they went out to Stone City near Anamosa for two different summers to paint.
I'm talking with Joni Kinsey. She is professor of American art history at the School of Art and Art History at the University of Iowa. She also serves on the National Advisory Board for the Grant Wood Art Colony. Now, on the University of Iowa campus, we were talking about all those little Grant Wood touches all over Cedar Rapids. We're going to talk about those amazing murals at Iowa State University in just a moment. What Grant Wood can we find on the University of Iowa campus?
It's here, but it's not well publicized, and it's not well marked, and we're hoping that that will change. There are a number of important landmarks here in town that Grant Wood had direct involvement with. Most notable and probably the best known is his own home on Court Street, 1142 Court Street, beautiful brick house, which was a Civil War era home that was rather dilapidated when he bought it in 1935. But he lovingly restored it, and there are many Grant Wood touches there.
And that's privately owned.
It is still privately owned, but I don't think it's any secret now that Jim Hayes, James P. Hayes, prominent citizen here in Iowa City, has planned to bequeath that house and four adjacent properties to the University of Iowa as a Grant Wood Center in the future.
What else is in Iowa City?
Certainly what's now called the Old Art Building on the river on campus. That was where Grant Wood taught and has been saved from wreckage after the 2008 flood because of that historic association. We currently have a proposal to the University of Iowa administrators to name that the Grant Wood Building, and I certainly hope that happens. it was his place of work during that time. But also, much less well known is the darling little Danforth Chapel across the river right by the Iowa Memorial Union. Grant Wood actually proposed the design for that in the 1930s, and although it was not built until after his death, in 1951 it was completed. During his last years, Grant Wood was planning for it to be built and for him to paint a series of murals in that building, which would have made it a real national, international landmark on the University of Iowa campus.
Now, talking of proposing to name a building after Grant Wood, there is an elementary school in Iowa City named after Grant Wood, but it's surprising that there's not a building on campus named for Grant Wood. Do you feel like his legacy was, after the fraught history on campus, after all of the politics, was his legacy kind of shunted aside?
No question about it. There was a concerted campaign by Lester Longman and a number of people in the department that he hired to essentially discredit Grant Wood during his life and after his death, which was quite sudden and quite early. 1942, he was just 51 years old, or the next day he would have been, died the day before his birthday. They essentially erased his legacy on campus and did everything they could to erase the significance of regionalism in the history of American art. One of the most important contributors to that obscurity for regionalism was one of Grant Wood's colleagues, a young art historian named named Horst Janssen. And many people who have taken art history classes remember the big textbook, Janssen's History of Art, which he wrote later. Janssen had a very long and storied career himself, but also had a personal antipathy to Grant Wood for a number of reasons, and had a major impact on the world of art history. The writing of it, the teaching of it, and the development of the understanding we have of American art history in the second half of the 20th century. Janssen essentially wrote regionalism out of the story. His textbook, which has remained in print, only recently in a recent revision now includes Grant Wood. In six editions for decades, it did not mention Grant Wood at all. And regionalism got a very scant and dismissive single paragraph.
So we know that Grant Wood was a lot more than American Gothic, although American Gothic is his most famous, most iconic masterpiece. But it's not just his most famous masterpiece. It is one of the most recognized pieces of art worldwide. Was it the popularity, the fact that the public identified with that picture that actually kept his legacy alive, do you think?
I think, indeed. Certainly American Gothic has contributed greatly to the enduring fame and beloved status, as you called it, of Grant Wood himself. But his other work did as well. When we think about Iowa art, it is embodied by the work of Grant Wood. And American Gothic is the best well-known, the most well-known, but at the same time, many other images. Catherine earlier mentioned young corn, and there's fall plowing and spring turning and many other really spectacular landscapes that any Iowan will recognize as the world around us. They are the embodiment, as I said, of Iowa, not only for us, but for people around the world.
You know, I know that the Midwest gets overlooked in a lot of ways, but if I tried, and I'm not an art historian, but if I try to think of iconic Minnesota art or Nebraska art or Missouri art, nothing honestly comes to mind. I mean, when you think Iowa art, you think Grant Wood. So did he really put Iowa on the map artistically?
I would say so. Absolutely. I don't think there's any question about that.
And what does that mean, that his work really has been this emissary to the rest of the world?
It means that Iowa is important to the history of American culture in ways that I think a lot of people don't appreciate and don't recognize. But it's absolutely true, and it deserves much more credit and pride on the part of Iowans and on the part of Americans. When people from elsewhere talk about Grant Wood's work, they often say how invented it is. Oh, it really doesn't look like that. Iowa must be flat. And the simplification that he often did create in his work, the smooth, rounded forms and so forth, It can't really look like that, but it doesn't take very far into Iowa landscape driving around to see, yeah, it really does look like that, and it is really spectacular. So this image that he provided brings Iowa to the world.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about Grant Wood, his life, his work, his legacy, as we begin Iowa Week on Talk of Iowa and River to River. All this week, we're exploring artistic Iowa. With me right now, Joni Kinsey. She's a professor of American art history at the School of Art and Art History at the University of Iowa. Coming up in just a moment, we'll also talk about Grant Wood's work on the campus of Iowa State University, and we'd love to hear from you. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Iowa Week on Talk of Iowa and River to River. All this week, we're going to be exploring artistic Iowa, and we have begun today with a conversation about Iowa's most famous artist, Grant Wood. This year marks the 125th anniversary of his birth. With me, Joni Kinsey. She's professor of American art history at the School of Art and Art History at the University of Iowa. She also serves on the National Advisory Board for the Grant Wood Art Colony, which sponsors Grant Wood Fellows. And joining us now is Lynette Pullman, director and chief curator for University Museums at Iowa State University. And as we've mentioned a couple of times already, Iowa State University is the home of some of Grant Wood's really best known, maybe even most often seen works of art. Hello, Lynette.
Hello, Charity. Good to be with you.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And for those who did not go to school at Iowa State University and did not pass these remarkable murals on a regular basis, can you describe them for us?
Well, very briefly, they're located in the main lobby and in the stairwell of the classic Beaux-Arts building. They were done in two cycles. The lower level, the one you first meet when you come in, is called Breaking the Prairie, and it depicts a man in two scenes, actually, one in the 1840s breaking the original prairie sod, and the other one using the highest technology, the steel-bottom John Deere plow of the 1870s, which kind of coincides with the development of agriculture at Iowa State. And then as you go up the stairway, there are nine murals that depict the divisions of Iowa State at the time and focus on agriculture, engineering, and then domestic arts.
Well, and you said Beaux-Arts building, and these are at Parks Library, right?
They are. They're Parks. Okay. The Beaux-Arts is just the style of that building.
Oh, okay.
Yes, sorry.
No, that's all right. So since this is the main library on campus, I know that as a student, I passed by those murals all the time, but they are a highlight when you bring people to campus at Iowa State, right?
They're a highlight for our visitors, but also most importantly for our students. We teach visual literacy and learning in front of those murals on a daily basis and to students of all colleges at Iowa State. They are familiar, they're narrative, and we can help students understand how critical thinking and communication skills can be expressed in art.
And these murals are enormous. I mean, they just dwarf you as they walk into this really stunning staircase and as you travel through the library. We touched on it just briefly, how these murals came about, but can you flesh that story out for us a little bit, Lynette? How did they come to be, and how did they come to be in that library?
Well, I need to back up into the 1920s when President Raymond Hughes arrived in 1927, and his first official appointment at the college then was the creation of the Art Committee, and he made himself chair of that Art Committee. And that points to how important he thought the development of the fine arts should become at Iowa State. He initiated really kind of a cultural renaissance, and it was reinforced by the PWPA that came on as a result of the Great Depression. But early in 1930s, he was already having contact with Grant Wood and other artists to create site-specific works of art for Iowa State. A person that's not well known in Iowa history is Zenobia Ness, who was a faculty member here, and also later on she was head of the salon for the Iowa State Fair, which was Iowa's most famous exhibition venue at the time. And so Hughes engaged Grant Wood even to approve some preliminary mural designs for the library. Those don't exist, so we don't know exactly what he approved. And then the PWPA came along, and Raymond Hughes was very adept at seeing the financial opportunity to merge his vision with the federal funding, and they moved forward. But he also documented that even if the murals were not part of the federal program, he was committed to seeing it through at a time when not only he saw a reduction in 1933-34 of 40% of his salary, but he laid off almost a third of faculty and staff at Iowa State. It was a huge heroic deed to hire not only Grant Wood, but Christian Peterson in that same year to engage visual artists to change the landscape of Iowa State.
Well, and Joni, you mentioned that once these murals were commissioned, they were actually partially created at the University of Iowa. I think there's a photo of Grant Wood and Christian Peterson in an empty swimming pool.
Yeah, the location for this mural studio was an old, unused swimming pool in a recreation building that no longer exists on campus. And they built a false floor in the pool, and you had to descend to the floor down the ladders in the tile-flanked pool. And they set up scaffolding and these wonderful huge, you know, easels essentially to paint these murals. So they were painted here in Iowa City, but they at the University of Iowa, but they were then designated for the Iowa State Library.
Well, and Lynette, as you use these murals to educate students and everybody who gets a campus tour walks past the murals and looks up at them, what do you think people experience? I mean, what do you experience when you look at them?
Oh, so many things. I think people are transformed back to the 1930s and reflect upon what life was like in Iowa. But those murals are also, in some degree, if you stay with them long enough, they're optimistic about the future as well. It certainly tells the challenges of that era, but it also talks about the impacts of transformation of technology and the role of women, as well as agricultural advancements. And the prairie, breaking the prairie, in a nutshell, it's Abraham Lincoln, potentially. It looks like it could be him. And if you think of his impact on the nation, but also at Iowa State, he was the president who signed the Morrell Act, which is the land-grant act. And the short propaganda is, if you work hard, get an education, you too can grow up to be president. That's the quick takeaway, if you will, as you walk by the general mural in the lobby area.
Well, and it's interesting because I'm sure that there are many students and adults or older people who stand in front of that and think, you know, maybe I have a future in some big way. We have this tweet from Kate who says, in high school, I wrote a paper on Grant Wood. His story gave me the hope that I could become an artist in Iowa. And Joni, I'm sure a lot of students have that experience where they think, well, if Grant Wood could do this, maybe I can too.
Well, I hope that's the case. I really do. I think that Grant Wood did believe that real art, quality art, important art, art of enduring significance could originate in a place like this. And I think that he underscored that in every way throughout his life, referring specifically to that mural that she just described at the Iowa State Library called Breaking the Prairie. It has another title, which I think is quite apt. It's a quote from Daniel Webster, and it's called When Tillage Begins, the Other Arts Follow. And there's more to the statement about how farmers are, in fact, the founders of civilization. But when tillage begins, the other arts follow, it's essentially that farming, cultivation, is in fact the bedrock of civilization. I think that is a larger lesson that Grant Wood was teaching his whole life, that cultivation could and does and should continue to emerge out of a state like Iowa that is largely based on cultivating the soil. He was cultivating the arts and civilization in his own work based on that cultivation. I think he had great respect for the cultivators, but we need to put that term into a larger context, that he was, in fact, providing us with a real model for the notion that Iowa and its cultivation is much more than we might imagine.
Now, there are some people who critique the work of Grant Wood and say that he trafficked in stereotypes about Iowa and farmers and people from here. And earlier when we were at his studio, Catherine Kuhnow mentioned how he cultivated an image. He managed his brand. He wore his overalls, even though, you know, he had traveled extensively around the world and was a very really accomplished artist and a cosmopolitan man. So when we think about that criticism, trafficking in stereotypes, Joni, what do you think of that?
I think there's a fine line between stereotypes and archetypes, and I think that what he was really about was pointing us towards archetypes, even though he did sometimes satirize stereotypes and had sometimes a wonderful sense of humor about that. He was, I think, in a much larger sense, pointing towards the notion of myth-making and its importance in the best sense of American culture and how we continue to rely upon these archetypal ideas and values that, in his case, for example, farmers and working people represent, and the significance of those in our society and in our history, in our culture.
Well, Lynette, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, too. What do you think?
I think that was well said by Joni. I stand pat right there.
We have an email from Susan in Jewell. She says, I think it's a shame that American Gothic is owned by the Art Institute in Chicago. I think it should live in the Cedar Rapids Art Museum. What are the chances of getting it back to Iowa? And I think that there's a bigger story here, because the fact that it was purchased by the Art Institute is a big part of the story, right, Joni?
Yeah, it was purchased immediately after its display at the Art Institute of Chicago in 1930. And immediately was popularized in all sorts of newspapers and magazines and just struck a nerve at the time for being a kind of representation of what was very important at that time, a very tenuous era of economic insecurity and international unease between the wars. There was a sense of isolationism and an inward turning politically and socially that Americans felt they needed to kind of remind themselves of what was permanent and enduring about being American. And I think that image represented that for so many people. And the Art Institute of Chicago had the prescience to buy it for $300, and it has remained in that museum ever since. They don't lend it often at all. It's been a huge coup to get it back here on a couple of occasions, but in general, it's one of the prized works at the Art Institute of Chicago, and I'm sure it will never leave.
Remain there. But also, that has to have something to do with its high visibility as well, because it certainly gets a lot more visitors at the Art Institute of Chicago than it would anywhere in Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
It certainly does, and I think that's an important thing, that a lot of people see it there.
Let's go to the phones. Jim is on the line in Dubuque. Hi, Jim.
Howdy, doody.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, my older brothers, when he was at Iowa State, became a close friend of Charlotte Peterson, who is the widow of Christian Peterson. She mentioned to him that when Christian died, his studio was not sealed, and she was too busy dealing with the funeral and all that other stuff. A number of people just walked into the studio and walked off with whatever works caught their fancy. So a lot of his work is missing because of that. She was able to keep a few things. For example, I have in my possession a model for what's called Christ in Bondage. But go ahead.
Yeah, let's let Lynette weigh in on that, because, I mean, while we're not focusing this hour on Christian Peterson, he did work with Grant Wood, and his artwork is very visible all over the Iowa State University campus. And I know it's a legacy you've also worked to ensure, Lynette.
We have. Peterson kept very few records on what did he create and when. Just a curatorial checklist would have been wonderful, which he didn't keep. We've spent 30 years trying to recreate that checklist, but also we have acquired back through gift donation many, literally thousands of his sculptures and drawings in the last 30 years. The caller in is absolutely correct that things did disappear from Peterson's studio, but many people has also gifted them back, and we're very appreciative of that.
Joni, are there still Grant Wood works that show up, or has that been pretty much found?
They are occasionally emerging here and there. I just saw a couple of weeks ago two small Italian paintings that he did while he was on his couple of trips in Europe, and these were small oil sketches from Sorrento in a private collection that came up for auction. Here and there, we do see an emerging work by Grant Wood. It's not very common, but they do occur.
So in just a few minutes of closing, we've talked a lot about the impact that Grant Wood's work has had on both the University of Iowa and Iowa State University campus. We've talked about his impact in Cedar Rapids and in Iowa City and taking Iowa to the rest of the world. What do you think the most important thing is to know about his legacy? I mean, most of us think Grant Wood, we think American Gothic. What's the next thing that people should know, Joni?
I would say that, as I've sort of alluded to in most of my remarks, is that Grant Wood doesn't usually get the kind of significance that he deserves by academics, but even by people who really like his work. They tend to think of it in a very regional context, and that can be limiting. Grant Wood's work actually is some of the most important art in the world, I would argue, American Gothic most notably, but in a broader sense, some of the most notable and important telling and redolent and evocative work in American history. He had a lot to say about who we are and what we are.
Lynette, what do you think?
I agree. I think that his expression was what it is, but also his intellectual qualities, I think sometimes people overlook. He had a great deal of depth, and I think if part of the looking and the understanding of Grant Wood is an exercise in understanding who we are, where we're coming from, and he speaks for not only Iowa, but people beyond core human experience. And I think we have to get over the parodies and really go and look at him as a fine artist with great intellect and great expression.
And Lynette, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Lynette Pullman of Iowa State University and the University Museums at Iowa State. And Joni, before we go, I know that you've done a great deal of work to keep Grant Wood's legacy alive, and you have the 2016 Grant Wood Symposium coming up.
Yes, the Grant Wood Art Colony here at the University of Iowa has a biennial every 2 years symposium. And this coming October, October 28th and 29th, is this year's edition for his 125th birthday anniversary. It's called Myth, Memories, and the Midwest, and a number of major scholars, nationally recognized Grant Wood scholars and regionalist scholars, are coming to campus. I hope everybody will attend. It's free and open to the public.
All right. Thank you so much, Joni.
My pleasure.
Joni Kinsey, professor of American art history at the School of Art and Art History at the University of Iowa. She also serves on the National Advisory Board for Grant Wood Art Colony. And all this week is Iowa Week. We'll be exploring artistic Iowa. You've also heard us talking about the Iowa Public Radio coloring book. Well, now you get a chance to help us decide what's going to be on the cover of that coloring book. If you go to our Facebook page, you can find a link where you get to see the pictures and place your votes. You can also find that link on Twitter at IPR Talk. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.